It is really a pleasure to look out and see this church mostly full. Front pew is open. There's a few seats within the congregation, but we have quite a few people here this morning, and I thank God for it. I also thank God for the ministry of our brother that he has proven to be a minister of God, and his desire is to serve you, the children of God. So give him your kind attention, Apostle Roland Surratt.
Thank you very much. This is quite a challenge for me this morning, and I would very much appreciate your prayers. I have special feelings for those who I know as mothers, because of their love and care for children, I titled the sermon "A Tribute to Mothers," and I would like to do that, but I feel a little uncertain of myself, so I would appreciate your help in asking for your prayers. I would like to pay tribute to all mothers and grandmothers this day, both those who are present and those not present, who have blessed us with their labor of love. It is said and worthy to be repeated that a mother's love is like the love of God. And I can testify to the truthfulness of that. It's the most unselfish love when it's a true mother's love. First of all, I would like to give recognition to my wife, June. She is the mother of our two sons. And I give recognition to her devotion and sacrifice for the well-being of them through their growing up years, and for her continued support and love in their adult years. She is typical of many mothers, and yet each mother is unique in her personal way of raising her children. And that is in itself an indication of how God works. I would like to give recognition to our daughter-in-law, Carrie, the mother of our two grandsons, for her devotion and sacrifice for their well-being. As you know, they live a little distance away, so we don't get to see them much, and we don't get to see them as much as we'd like to, but when we are there, we do enjoy being with them. This day, I would like to give recognition to the mothers of the young children that we have in our midst. We have been greatly blessed with a new generation of little children, and we enjoy them very much. They are a blessing of God to us. We have reason to give recognition to the parents and grandparents of these children for bringing them to Sunday school and to church, that they may be taught the gospel in their youth. This is the means of strength for the church yet future, Also, I would like to give recognition to all the Sunday school teachers who give of their time and talents in teaching our children and young people. And I know, and you've probably all heard testimonies of what they learned in Sunday school. The adults that were children at one time in this local church or in the Church of Christ, quite often give testimony of what they were taught as young children. In 1 Nephi, the 5th chapter, I want to read one verse, and that's verse 167. 1 Nephi 5, 167. It says, "Wherefore worship the Lord thy God, and honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God shall give thee." What's the first thing he said? Worship the Lord thy God. That's number one. But it also says to honor thy father and thy mother. Why? They happen to be just a little bit wiser. That's why. Give respect to your elders and listen to what they have to say. Oh, yes, we all get repetitious, and you might get tired of hearing what we have to say, and you may get tired of our testimonies, but someday, somewhere along the way, you will remember one of those testimonies, and it will help you. Or you may remember what your father, your mother told you, or what the Sunday school teacher told you, and it will help you. In Proverbs, the first chapter of Proverbs, verses 8 and 9, it says, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck." You know, we look at each other and we see earrings and maybe hats and certain things that dress us up, a tie, whatever. And you know, it is pleasing to see that. The women have corsages this morning. Pleasant to see. But he's talking about something a little less tangible. He's talking about the effects of the instruction of your father and the law of your mother. They show up, those effects. They show up in your life. They show up in your countenance. Mama may have corrected you and said, "I don't want that frown anymore." And so the child has a grin on his face. He has a pleasant countenance, and he grows up that way. So these are the things that mothers teach, how to present yourself to the world. Well, we all know the story of the first mother, Eve. And God made a statement. He said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him an helpmate for him." The Lord took a rib out of the side of Adam, and he created woman, Eve. And Adam said, "Now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Where? Out of the side. Where is woman to be? At man's side. Not under his feet or not above him, but at his side. Man and woman are to work together. And when they don't, there's problems. But the Lord has planned this and foreordained it to be. And Adam called his wife Eve because she was the mother of all living. A very important position in the history of man. Paul made this comment in 1 Corinthians 11th chapter, 12th verse. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. He ended up saying, all things of God. This was God's plan. Well, there was a woman who couldn't bear children. She went through all her young years, and finally in her old age, you know, it was all past, wasn't going to happen. You know who I'm talking about, Sarah, Abraham's wife. And so there was to be a promise, or there was a promise. Abraham was to have seed. And this seed was very important. And so they made a plan. And he did have seed by Sarah's handmaid. Well, that wasn't what the Lord intended. Although he knew what was going to happen. But he said, Sarah, thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed. And she did. Even though they both laughed about it, thought that is the most ridiculous thing that won't happen. But it happened. So don't laugh at anything the Lord says he's going to do. He's got his plans. And he made his covenant and kept it. Well, the son of Sarah, Isaac, came time that he was to have a wife. And so arrangements were made, and Rebekah was chosen. And Rebekah's brothers had a little something to say about it. They said, thou art our sister. Be thou the mother of thousands of millions, and let thy seed possess the gate of those which hate them. Did you ever think about who all they are? Well, naturally, we think of Israel, but they're more than Israel. Rebekah bore two sons. I think we all know the story about Esau and Jacob. Esau was the eldest, the first to be born. And he had the birthright, and he had the blessing that was to come. And so, in a weak moment, he sold his birthright to his brother, Jacob. That offended the Lord. The Lord didn't like Esau for that reason. And then, with a little conniving, and you know the story of Jacob and his mother managed to get the blessing of Isaac to bless Jacob instead of Esau. Well, why? You know, was that really the right thing to do? Apparently it was. In the eyes of the Lord, he wants his people to desire his blessings. If you've got a foolish notion in your head that you aren't worthy of a blessing, you'd better rethink it. You sit down and say, well, God isn't going to give me anything. He isn't. But if you want it, He'll give it to you. So that's all the whole thing right there. It's all right there. Your attitude toward the things that are good. You want the good things. Well, there was another mother, the mother of Moses. And this is a different kind of story. You all know the story where Pharaoh decided he was going to kill all the male children of the Israelites. All the first child. And they did. But she hid out her child. She knew she couldn't very long. Sooner or later, they're going to catch up and they're going to kill her son. So she made an ark. I don't know whether she knew what she was doing or not, but apparently she had some idea. And the Lord perhaps prompted her. She made a little ark, laid him in it, and set it down in the next to the bank of the river, the bulrushes. And guess who come along and found him? The princess, Pharaoh's daughter. She wanted that child. So she took him home. She provided that even his real mother would come and nurse him, and he would be raised. He was saved, and he was, of all things, raised in the home of the Pharaoh. Well, that just goes to show the Lord has some ideas, and he had some plans for Moses, which he carried out, and it was pretty important. Well, there's another story. A story that has been told many times, and probably here at Mother's Day. It's a story in the Book of Mormon. If you want to read it, it's in the 26th chapter of Alma. And you all know what I'm talking about, I think most of you at least. It's talking about 2,000 young men. Nephites? No. They weren't Nephites. Well, I guess they might have said they were adopted in as Nephites, but actually they were Lamanites. Their parents had been converted. But the parents would not fight. They had shed too much blood, so they decided that they would not fight. And the Lamanites came against the Nephites where these people were. And I hope I'm telling this correctly. My memory isn't always that good at times. But I'm trying to make this, not belabor this story or any of these stories too long. But they, these young men grew up, and they were just, they were very young men. And Moroni, I believe it was, said that he called them his sons, 2,000 of them. It made up a good-sized army. And these young men had been raised by their parents, their mothers, and they had been taught if they did not doubt that that God would deliver them. Remember that. If they did not doubt. Wow, what a lesson. If you and I don't doubt, God will deliver us. Regardless of what's going to go on out there. Regardless if the Lord sends an army in here to slay a bunch of people, which is prophesied to happen. If we don't doubt, He will deliver us. He will give us the means by which we might defend ourselves. But these young men were commissioned to go into battle. And they were willing. They volunteered to go. 2,000 of them. And do you know what happened? They went into battle against the most fierce people that there was, the Lamanites. And not one of them was slain. I think there probably some were hurt, but they were not slain. They were not killed. And it says, we do not doubt our mothers knew. How important is a mother's teachings to her children? How important is that? Sometimes we think, well, the dad knows everything. But that's not necessarily true. They did not doubt their mothers. Yea, and even according to their faith, it was done unto them. And I did remember the words which they said unto me that their mothers had taught them. Very important lesson. Well, there's another mother that we need to consider. The mother of Jesus, Mary. She had the unusual experience of having an angel come to her, the angel Gabriel. And he said, fear not, Mary. This is in Luke, the first chapter. I'll start with verse 30. Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, and bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus. He shall be great, and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom shall there be no end. Then said Mary unto the angel, how shall this be, seeing I know no man? And the angel answered and said unto her, the Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which thou shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God. What was Mary's reaction? She says, oh no, I don't want that to happen. No, she said, behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. Be it according to thy word. There's probably many, many stories that could be told about the work and the special labor of love of the mothers. I don't feel adequate to do this. But I have an unusual heritage that I would like to relate to you today. This is more in a way of a testimony than a sermon. But it does have a sermon in it for the mothers. I want to pay tribute to a woman that lived was born 157 years ago, just prior to the Civil War. She was born in Akron, Ohio. Her name was Anna Amanda Robertson. Born June 11, 1850. This woman was converted at an early age to the restored gospel of Christ. She lived an exemplary life for her posterity. When she passed away at the age of 72, she had given birth to 15 children, raising 10 of them one stepson and one grandson to adulthood. Five of her children died in infancy. Anna's mother, Catherine Anna Robertson, had joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1842, prior to Joseph Smith's death, and the resulting divisions of the church. 20 years later, she joined the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Anna was baptized in that church in 1864 in Brown County, Illinois, at the age of 14. Anna married Amos Bean Surratt, November 20, 1876, at Mount Sterling, Illinois. Anna and Amos both had been married previously, and each had lost their companions by death. It appears they had known each other through the association of the church, and in fact, the two couples, Amos and his first wife, and Anna and her first husband, were married on the same day, April 2, 1868. There are no facts recorded concerning the wedding, but it is possible they were married at the same church with a double wedding ceremony. Now, Amos's parents, Jeremiah and Martha Surratt, were members of the church prior to Joseph Smith's death and lived in a settlement of Surratt's called the Surratt Hollow near Mount Sterling, Illinois, not far from Nauvoo. Although Amos had been baptized in the church, he had turned against the Restoration teachings and had forbidden it to be taught in his home. Anna, on the other hand, being devout in her beliefs, secretly taught their children. Several of them continued strong in their faith in the restored gospel to their deaths. Anna's first husband, John Williams, was a soldier in the Union Army during the Civil War. He died of physical complications while in action, I think here at Stuartville, Missouri. Amos also had joined the Union Army, but was mustered out when he contracted typhoid fever. Amos' first wife bore him two sons. His second son and his wife died shortly after the birth. Anna and her first husband had three daughters. Two died as infants. When Anna and Amos were married, she had a daughter and he had a son. They continued to live in Illinois for a year, and they had a son. In 1878, they traveled from Illinois to northern Kansas by ox team and cart, and then on to Thayer County, Nebraska, to homestead with their three children. The government had supplied them and others with various items of food, beans, rice, corn, etc., to persuade them to develop the unbroken prairie. Because there were few trees in that area, their first house was made of sod dug out of the side of a hill. Several of the children were born in that house. They lived on the emigrant trail between Belvedere and Hebron, Nebraska. One of the children tell about the travelers that came through there. Quite often, Amos would provide food for them, even at sacrificing the food from his, or taking his food from his own children. He was very free-hearted that way. As a result of moving to that undeveloped land, Anna had to give up her association with members of the church for a time. But this did not deter her efforts to teach her children the gospel. Because Amos took the older sons into the field to work with them, she was not able to continue to teach them the gospel. The younger children were taught and were eventually baptized in the church in spite of Amos's objections. Anna taught from the Book of Mormon. And as her children became old enough to read it, she challenged them to pray to obtain a witness of the truthfulness of the book. She was strongly convicted to this gospel. The Surratt family experienced many trying times and hardships that were not told or recorded except for a few handed down by word of mouth. Amos found that breaking the sod and raising crops the first few years were difficult and yielded little. Finally, he decided he must leave the farm for a short time and find work with his ox team and cart. He left Anna with the children on that desolate prairie with very little food. After he was gone for a time, she began to think he was not going to return. She determined that she would sell their milk cow to the nearest neighbor and go to Nebraska City to get help. As she prayerfully considered this late one night while sitting on her porch, she heard Amos's ox cart in the distance creaking along. She ran to meet him, crying and thanking the Lord. He had found work and bought supplies for them. Eventually, they obtained a better farm home. And when one of the younger boys was just a toddler, he had observed the workings of the windmill over the dug well. As the wind would turn the blades on the windmill, the shaft that pumped the water would move up and down. For it to do so, a bolt had to be inserted in the hole of the shaft connecting the pump. One day, while watching it, he saw the pump was not connected, and he inserted his finger. It cut his finger off just below the first knuckle or joint, leaving it connected only by the skin. The parents were gone to town, leaving Anna's oldest daughter to care for the children. She grabbed the little boy up and took him into the house. The only thing she knew to do was to put the end of the finger back in place, put consecrated olive oil on it, and wrap it up. She told her parents what had happened when they returned. They left the finger bandaged for a few days before looking at it. When they unwrapped it, the finger was healed. Years later, when that boy grew into manhood, he became a barber, and he often told about how his finger had been healed, which made it possible for him to use it in his barber work. If he had lost the end of his finger, it would have made it very difficult for him to use scissors or clippers, and back then, they used the hand clippers. They didn't have electric clippers like you have today. One by one, the Surratt children grew up and married, establishing their own homes. The younger children became associated with members of the RLDS Church, and some of them married church members. Two of the sons, Brennard and Leonard, married sisters of the Walter Minerva Self family, Lottie and Jesse. After the deaths of Amos and Anna, several of the Surratt families moved to Independence, Missouri, along with a great many other church members, in anticipation of the gathering to Zion. In the early 1920s, a major controversy occurred in the church, causing several members to withdraw their membership. The Surratt and Self families took a strong position against the change promoted by the church hierarchy. But eventually they submitted and remained in the church. After some time, the Leonard and Jesse Surratt family joined the Church of Christ with headquarters on the Temple lot. They remained with this church to the end of their lives. while their siblings remained with the RLDS church. None of them lived to see the significant changes that took place in the RLDS church in the 1980s. Amos and Anna were my grandparents. Both of them passed away before I was born. Anna was 37 years old when my father, Leonard, was born, and he was 46 years old when I was born. Many changes have occurred on this promised land during these three generations of which I am a part. But I'm here to testify that there is one thing that has not changed, but remains a witness to all peoples on this land: the fullness of the gospel of Christ. This church, the Church of Christ, has made significant corrections in the structure of the church. But the principles of the gospel and the authority to teach and preach it remains the same as it was when it was restored in 1829 and 30. This day I want to give recognition to my grandmother, Anna Surratt, for her dedication to teach her children the fullness of the gospel in adverse conditions. Also, I give recognition to my parents, Leonard and Jesse Surratt, for having the faith and discernment to follow the guidance of the Holy Spirit in making the difficult decision to join this Church of Christ, contrary to the strong wills and persuasions of their siblings. This is my heritage and my testimony, and I give it knowing that I am only one of many who have richly benefited through the steadfastness of our progenitors. I acknowledge these things, being aware I have nothing of which to boast, but to give thanks unto God for all He has seen fit to give me. I was privileged to be raised in a Christian home. I was privileged to be raised in this gospel, the fullness of the gospel of Christ. And I know that I'm accountable for everything that I've been taught, for every lesson, for every truth. But I know the value of these things came not cannot be put in a few words, and they're beyond anything I can express. But as I recall the happenings in my life, I remember the significant goodness and truth of the gospel as it was demonstrated in the very eyes and countenance of my mother. I know that when she corrected me, she did it in love. But she corrected me. My father once told that he had developed the habit of blinking his eyes when he was a young boy. His mother corrected him. You know how she did it? She told him once, "Stop it." The next time she didn't say a word, but she slapped him in the face. You know, he never blinked his eyes anymore. He told that to me. There is something about action that carries a weight. But you know, he loved his mother and never said a bad word about her, ever. And that love is something that that I carry forth also. I remember the good things, but I also remember the way in which my parents looked at me. And although I was the youngest one, and they're probably tired of looking at kids and caring for them when they got to me, but they did so. And right up to the very last, that love was shown in their faces. Well, I see it. I see it here today. It's carried forward. That love is expressed because every parent feels at some point they're helpless. What am I going to do? How am I going to help my child? How am I going to be sure that I have done everything that I need to do to help them? Well, I know the answer to that. I know it well. I've memorized it and I've put it into action. As I kneel at my bed at night, my prayer is for my children and my grandchildren. I just do that. I know it's a habit, but I do it, knowing that God can intervene. He can be with our children in very adverse places. So I wrote a little poem here several years ago, and I don't know whether it makes any sense or not, but I called it Mother's Praying. Mother's praying, I said in whispered tone, as the outline by the bed was in solemn prayer alone. Mother's praying, I saw a letter in her hand from my oldest brother, a soldier in another land. Mother's praying, the Lord she addressed as we knelt and family prayer expressed. Mother's praying, years later, I answered an inquiring lad who stood by the door as my wife knelt by our bed. Thank you.
says that I speak half the time without this being on. This evening, I'd like to invite every one of you back. We're going to be given a sermon by Apostle William A. Sheldon. Please come back and enjoy the worship of the Lord with us. On Monday, the 14th, there's going to be a study class here at the church. On May 17th, Thursday, there will be a bridal shower for Liz Nacky and Jason Oldham in the annex at 7 p.m. Liz and Jason are registered at Bed Bath & Beyond and Macy's. On May 19th, Women's Department garage sale. Contact Holly Cook for information. On May 20th, Sunday, we're going to have a presentation by Mike Smith, myself, and Craig Carmichael on Financial Peace University. And this is at 1:30 on Sunday in the annex. Attention ladies, East Local's Women's Department will be having their annual garage sale this coming Saturday, May 19th, at Holly Cook's house. Please bring all garage sale items to the cookhouse Tuesday evening to help set up for the sale. All items should be clean and priced to sell. There is also a sign-up list for everyone, both men and women, to give a few hours of your time to help out at the garage sale on Saturday. Please, please sign up. It's in the back. Don't forget our continued support to rediscover mental health by bringing any soap boxes, toothpaste you have to donate. Thanks to all the women.